Yeah, I'd trade me too for Anthony Davis.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. We're going to be looking back at a monster 10-game Wednesday in the NBA, some injury news coming out as well, struggling with my words today, and then previewing the four games for Thursday. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it indeed. We will start where we always do in these shows.
Monstrous line of the night.
I'm sure you're absolutely stunned, but the monstrous line of the night goes to Anthony Davis. It was a toss-up between him and another relative newcomer to the award, James Harden. Davis gets the award, 13 rebounds with 38 points. He hit a triple, he had 7 assists, which is becoming more of a theme for Davis this season, 2 steals and 4 blocks on 65% shooting, and 94% from the line on 16 attempts. It was an absolute monster of a performance. He's marginally behind Harden as the number 2 player this season, averaging 29 and 13, over 4 assists, and that's almost double the amount that he was at last season, where he was at 2.3. His blocks have gone up from last season up to 2.7. His steals have gone up from last season up to 1.8. He has increased basically every category this season, all the counting stats anyway. More points, more threes, more rebounds, more assists, more steals, and more blocks. The only thing that's letting him down compared to last season is the efficiency, as he's dropped 2 percentage points in his field goal percentage and 2.5 percentage points in his free throws. Otherwise, it's been an improvement in every single category from Davis for this season. Just an absolutely huge year, and he did it again with a big performance in a pretty comfortable blowout victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to Joshie Jackson of the Phoenix Suns. Jackson started in place of Devin Booker, played 30 minutes and had 17 points with 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals and a block. He actually shot the ball well as well. 54% from the field and nailed both of his free throws. Jackson has put up some pretty solid numbers lately. In fact, 5 consecutive games of double-digit scoring. He's had at least 5 rebounds in 4 of those 5 games. He's had back-to-back 3 steal games, and he has had an average of 4 assists over his last 3 games. And in fact, over the last 4 games, that's pushed him into the top 40 in fantasy. Over the last 8 games, he's inside the top 110. Now, those ranks are fueled by the fact that he's shooting 50% from the field and 86% from the line. This from a bloke who's 41% over the course of the season and 66% from the line over that same time frame. So it's a significant bump in his shooting numbers over these last handful of games. But the counting stats are nice. If you're looking for someone who you might want to take a flyer on, I think Jackson, who is available in 64% of leagues, might be someone worth looking at. Now, when you scour the depths of Phoenix Suns Twitter, they are clamoring for a starting lineup change. Now, whether that means the removal of TJ Warren back into a bench role, which could be a possibility, the removal of McCall Bridges, another possibility there, maybe it's D'Anthony Melton and go full point Booker. But they are seemingly thinking that Josh Jackson will be able to make, or at least find himself in a starting role relatively soon. And it's one of those situations, again, do you just want to take a flyer on a guy? Booker's ailing with the sore back. There's a potential for him to move forward with the complete understanding that this sort of shooting is not a realistic expectation from Booker. Not from Booker, from Jackson. But the other numbers, they're starting to come along and he's showing a little bit of promise, which is obviously a pretty big positive given how negative he has been for most of this season. I'm not calling him a must-add. He's not really that good of a player. But in a nice little stretch at the moment, so if you're in, you know, 14-team leagues, you add him in 12-team leagues, you weigh it up as opposed to, say, if you've got Justin Holiday, that is a clear drop where you drop Holiday and you add someone like Josh Jackson, who's playing quite well at the moment. The deep leaguer of the night goes to Yan Mahinmi of the Washington Wizards. Mahinmi played 25 minutes, had 6 points with 8 rebounds, and nabbed 5 steals. Mahinmi has a little bit of a knack for doing this with steals. Last season, he had a couple of weird big steal games. He's already had a 3-steal performance this season as well. I don't really know what it is about him doing this and getting these bulk steal numbers, but he has done it in the past. But we do have to realize that these last three games from Mahinmi, where he's played a lot of minutes, they've come against Joel Embiid, they've come against Joel Embiid, and they've come against Steven Adams. And Scott Brooks is one of those guys that refuses to play a better center in Thomas Bryant against a bigger guy like Adams or Embiid. The Wizards' next game is up against the Milwaukee Bucks, Brook Lopez, and then after that it's Serge Ibaka, and then after that it's the Knicks, and God knows who is going to be the starter. That's the London game. God, it's not going to be Enes Kanter, it's going to be Luke Kornet or Mitchell Robinson. So you could very easily see a scenario that Mahinmi doesn't even play in any of the next three games or plays 10 minutes. So while this is strong, and he's a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks on the back of big steal and big block numbers, there's a real chance that disappears pretty quickly because prior to the last four games, which was Adams, Embiid, Embiid, and then Whiteside before that, he was a DMP CD against the Hawks and the Hornets, and that's a real possibility for that to happen again for Mahinmi. So in a deeper league, you could have a look at him. You could grab him in 18 and 16 team leagues, but just I don't think that this is a solidification of his role. I think that things will be changing as we move forward. Let's go on to the next award of the day.
Young Gun of the Night.
It goes to the Don, Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz. We posited yesterday with the injuries to Ravishing Rick Rubio and Dante Exum that both Mitchell and Joey Ingles would have a larger ball handling, assist creation type role. Well, Mitchell showed that in this game. He had 7 assists to go with his 33 points, 4 triples and 4 rebounds. Shot 57% from the field as well, and we're starting to get back to what we'd hope Mitchell would be. Now, he's ranked 64th on the season, a clear disappointment, but over the last 7 games, he's back inside the top 40 because he's shooting 44% from the field. He's back at 86% from the line, and they're two numbers which are well down on the season. 4 assists, 1.4 steals, 3 triples, 23 points. That is a decent enough expectation for Mitchell. If he can stay, instead of 40% from the field, 44%, instead of 79% from the line, 84% from the line, then you are a top 40 guy, Don, and I think he can do that. The other numbers have been relatively in line with what we'd hoped, just didn't take that big free throw attempt rate step forward, the percentages have dropped. But with this short-term absence of Rubio, I think the assists are going to jump up, and we've just got to hope that the efficiency numbers hold from Mitchell. But it's a nice little hot streak that he does have going on at the moment. I tell a man's not hot. I don't think nobody surely could have any argument that the dud of the night is Evan Fournier of the Orlando Magic. Fournier played 37 minutes. He had 1 point. He had 1 steal. That is it. No rebounds, no assists, didn't hit a 3, was 0 of 8 from the floor, and managed to miss one of his 2 free throw attempts. One of the worst performances you will see this season from any player in those amount of minutes. That is unfathomable how you could just refuse to put up any sort of numbers in 37 minutes of action in a competitive game. Fournier has been a massive disappointment this season. Last year, he was the 70th ranked player. This season, not even in the top 130. And if you're not in the top 130, then you are not a 10-team league guy. And I think you're moving pretty close to being not necessarily a 12-team must-roster guy. That sort of a player who over the last 2 months is not even a top 150 guy, you're better off streaming that. Like, what's his upside here? What's he going to do to get better? Vucevic is taking on a larger role. He's never going to be a defensive dynamo. The efficiency's dropped off. He's not getting to the line as much. There's plenty of signs here that make me think that Fournier is not getting back to what he was last season, and he will remain outside the top 100 for the rest of this season. So I reckon, rostered in 77% of leagues, I think you can move on in all, I know you can move on in 10-team leagues, and I think in 12-teamers, I reckon you probably could make that decision. Now, it's all going to come down to who you're going to add. Are you going to add someone like Yan Mahinmi? Then the answer is no. Are you going to add Josh Jackson? Yeah, maybe. Are you going to add De'Anthony Melton or Derek White? Sure, that is a clear add decision to me. You're going to add Tom Bryant? I would do that over Evan Fournier, of course. That is pretty dependent on how your team looks, but I just have very limited faith in Fournier getting back some of those numbers that we saw from him last season. The plus-minus goats, Wesley Matthews had the best net rating, +113.5 for the Mavericks, while Fournier, unsurprisingly, was the worst net rating player of the entire game, -102.3, just to really wrap up his piss-poor performance. For the injuries for us to talk about, Nerlens Noel has been diagnosed with a concussion. We've got literally no idea how long a concussion can keep someone out because they all are very individual. Yeah, I think a couple of weeks is a realistic estimation. It's not going to change too much for fantasy leagues. Patrick Patterson gets a bit of a bump, some more minutes for Steven Adams, but no one who becomes a hot pickup or anything like that. Dylan Brooks undergoing surgery on his toe. It looks like it's going to keep him out for the season. Maybe you could think that gives hope for Justin Holiday, but we saw the last two games, Brooks didn't play and Holiday still did jack shit. So I think you can move on there. What it does is it keeps a guy like Omri Caspi in the rotation. I think we'll see Shelvin Mack and Javon Carter playing in the rotation more, although Carter inexplicably was pushed out of the rotation for Mack to return. But one of those guys is going to have a more solid role moving forward. It's been a really disappointing season for Brooks. Had the knee injury, now the toe injury. I thought he was always going to struggle to replicate what he did in March and April of last season as a rookie, but it's gone way worse than I would have anticipated. Some bad news as well for Jonas Valanciunas. It looks like he's going to be at least another 3 to 4 weeks from now with that hand injury. If you don't have an IR spot, it's pretty hard to hold on to Jonas. While Jared Dudley pinged his hammy in today's game, and as a guy as old as Dudley is, you would think that that is a couple of weeks on the sideline. The Nets are already missing the blue swimmer Alan Crabb and Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. So deep leagues, maybe you pay attention to Ken Faried, or you could look at someone like Trevion Graham, who played over Faried in today's game. But Faried put up some decent numbers in those games the last couple when he did have those opportunities. So he could be someone to look at, not for 12s, not for 14s, but maybe for 16-team leagues, you could have a look at someone like Kenneth Faried in that scenario. All right, let's move on now and take a look at these games in a little bit more detail. There were 10 games on, so quite a bit for us to talk about here, of course. Let's get into the first one of those games. It is the Philadelphia 76ers in that rematch from Tuesday against the Washington Wizards, and this time it was a blowout in the other direction. The Wizards winning 123-106. No JJ Redick again, so Furkan Korkmaz started once more. 16 points, 4 triples, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. He looks really comfortable in the NBA. That decision to decline his option seems absolute nonsense at this point. A third-year option on a 20-year-old kid seems ludicrous to have declined that option. And he is, I think, going to make the Sixers pay in this offseason. Whenever he's had this opportunity to start, whether it be for General Saunders, Jimmy Butler, or for JJ Redick, he's put up numbers, but then he goes back to a role in the teens, making him just a deeper league, but an interesting dynasty league guy. General Saunders himself had 23-9 in his 36 minutes, didn't shoot well, while Simmons had 15-10-8, and Embiid 35-14 with 3 blocks, a huge night from him. Babyneck Wilson Chandler struggled, while TJ McConnell he's an assist and steals guy. He had 5 assists, 1 steal, did his job there, did nothing else, but did his job there, while Mike Muscala is losing minutes to Jonah Bolden. Bolden remained in the rotation here, didn't do too much, but the 2 steals is interesting, and I could see him having or replacing someone like Muscala completely as the season goes on. Landry Shamet couldn't continue his 29-point performance from Tuesday. For the Wizards, Beal was great, 34 with 6 triples, while Otto Porter came off the bench again. Surely he's back in the starting lineup next game. 33 minutes, 23-6 with 3 steals. The usage rate is well up for Porter, which is always great for us to see, because this is a guy we know has had great efficiency, but has been consistently reduced to being a 13% usage guy and not being able to utilize that. The last two games, he has really, really looked strong in that area, so this could be a really big second half of the year for good old Otto Porter. Just keep an eye on it, but I think we could be seeing some pretty big stuff happen for Porter as this season rolls on. So just keep an eye on what he does there, because I think it is definitely looking pretty nice for him. Satoransky only the 4 points, but 5 rebounds, 11 assists, and 3 steals is strong. Ariza had 17-5, a nice bounce back there. While Tom Bryant, many people will drop Bryant after this. I won't be one of them, and I will add him when he gets dropped. I could be very wrong about this, but I think we see back to high 20s in minutes in the next couple of games against Lopez, against the Knicks coming up. I think that those minutes come back up. 9-6 with a 3 in only 14 minutes is still really good production, and I think those minutes jump back up. While Jeff Green only played 25 minutes, had 8 points with 2 triples. With Porter leaping back up, you probably can move on from Green in a lot of scenarios now. Next up, the Indiana Pacers got smacked by the Boston Celtics, 135-108. No Miles Turner, so Domantas Sabonis started, only needed 27 minutes to have 20-7 with 5 assists. Well, Daz Collison, who was questionable heading into the game, only played 22 minutes. He provided steals, which is what he's doing in quite large bunches at the moment. 7 points in 22. I don't think he's a must-roster guy. He has some value, but not a must roster guy. The Cock Monster, Kylo Quinn, 11-5-3 in his 21 minutes, back to being a permanent monster after that real weird performance on Tuesday. And Thaddeus Young was thoroughly average, 10-8. Makes a difference when you don't play against the Cavs. Oladipo, the struggles continue. Got smacked in the nose, but man, 17-3 with 3 triples, 1 steal, no assists, 46 from the field and 33 from the line. He is so well down in nearly every category from last season, shaping up to be one of the busts of the year. While it was a terrible performance from Bojan Bogdanović, 7 points in his 24 minutes. He'd been strong enough to be a 12-team league guy, though. Marcus Morris, who I thought maybe the wheels were falling off. Maybe not. 22 points in 23 minutes, 8 rebounds, no defense as per usual. 6 of 8 from the field, stupid high percentages from Morris. I still maintain that I don't know how it's going to stick, but it's still sticking. Jaylen Brown was good as well, 22-7 in 29 minutes, more of just a streamer and 14-16 team league guy than anything, while Gordo Hayward only played the 22 minutes, but you'd be really encouraged by what you saw, 14-5-4, the usage still relatively low, but that's good enough to hold in 12 teamers. Well, Jason Tatum had about 9 points in the first 2 minutes, only ended with 20 there, while Kyrie only needed 24 minutes, a little bit disappointing for his fantasy managers just because of how much of a blowout it was. While Al Horford, the minutes continue to be limited, only 18 minutes here. He seems to think that the knee injury won't need to be managed too much longer, so that's a good sign, but it's clearly frustrating if you've got him on your team. Let's go on to the next game, another blowout. There was seriously just blowouts all over the place here. The Brooklyn Nets beat the Atlanta Hawks 116-110. The Baptist John Collins, he is killing it. 30-14 with another steal. The defense is starting to come. And Trae Young had 17-2-7 with 2 steals. That is a really solid core for these guys moving forward. And I think they're going to put up some strong numbers to end this season. The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, had 8-6. He blocked 4 shots. I do think he's a 12-team league guy, probably not a must-roster guy, but should be on a roster somewhere. While Jeremy Lin moved to the bench, but still 28 minutes, 16-5 with 3 steals. Shot 18 times, only hit 5 of them, but that is really, really good from Lin. 2 games in a row on a back-to-back. It's making me interested in him in 12-team leagues, no doubt about that. Not quite there as him being a must-add guy, but he's of interest. Kevin Huerter played 37 minutes, had 14-10. I think he is a must-roster guy. You're well aware of that. While Bembry followed up his big game with one of the worst games of the season. 0 points on 0 of 6 shooting with 2 assists and a steal. He's more streamy. I'd rather have Lin than Bembry in a 12-team league. On to the Nets. Jarrett Allen, it's always good as a center to go up against Atlanta. 11-5 with 3 blocks, while Smoke and Joe Harris had 16-9 with 4 triples. Continues to be literally, is he the best shooter in the NBA? Non-Steph Curry division? He just doesn't miss, this guy. It's ridiculous how good of a shooter he is, and he's been able to increase other parts of his game as well. He's okay as a 12-teamer. D'Angelo was great, 23-3-4, while Dinwiddie also solid, 16-4-5. Now, we had Smoke and Joe return. We had Damari Carroll return. So, Rowdy Rodion's Kuroks, his usage did dip again, as expected, 11-4-2, added a triple one. But with Dudley now out, Hollis Jefferson out, Alan Crabb out, there might be an opportunity here for Kuroks, probably still more 14 or 16 teamers, but solid enough in this game. While Carroll, on the way back from his one game off, had 17 points, only played 21 minutes, but I do think that he can be a fairly solid option in 12 teamers, just as a fringe guy. I'd probably have him over Kuroks at the moment, just for the short-term value. I do like Kuroks, of course, way more long-term in terms of dynasty type numbers, but we're not sure where that's going to go as yet. I guess there is a possibility that we could have Hollis Jefferson back next game for this team. Trevion Graham, as I touched on earlier, a bit of a deeper league guy to take a look at if Hollis Jefferson and Dudley both aren't available for the next time out, or Ken Faried, of course. The Milwaukee Bucks go into Houston and get a big victory on the road, 116-109. Malcolm Brogdon's insane efficiency keeps up, 24 points on 12 shots for 75%, 5 rebounds and 3 assists. Didn't take any, he took 1-3, didn't hit any, that's weird. His efficiency is so high at the moment, that's making him a top 50 player over the last 2 weeks. I don't think that can stick at that level, but there's some pretty good numbers going down. While Gianni Antetokounmpo, a guy who started out his NBA career playing some shooting guard, had a 20-20 game, 27 points and 21 rebounds with 5 assists. And actually didn't kill your free throws, 79% on 14 attempts. Lopez had 4 blocks and 2 steals. Middleton was solid, while Bledsoe only played 28 minutes because foul trouble limited him. 10 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, and a block. So some good peripheral numbers there. While Thon McCare, who's coming off one of the best games of his season, played 3 minutes. And I think when DJ Wilson is back, McCare might be out of the rotation. For the Rockets, Jimmy Harden. So much is made on how the Bucks defended Harden, and he still had 42, 11, and 6 with 6 triples, 2 steals, and a block. Fantastic. While Austin Rivers, 13 and 4, 3 triples and 2 steals. And this is the first time in the last 6 games he hasn't got to 40 minutes, and he played 39 minutes. He is getting just a shit ton of run. That is going to be the problem with Rivers when Gordon comes back. He's a fringe 12-team league guy now. He will not maintain 12-team league value when Gordon's back. And then when Chris Paul's back, he goes back to irrelevancy. So there's some stream value in Rivers. It's not high, but there is something there. Gerald Green's a 3-point streamer as well. 16 points with 3 triples. Or Danny House, just the 3 points for him with 2 blocks. Yeah, more of that deeper league guy. Well, unsurprisingly, PJ Tucker's hot shooting didn't stick, but he added a wrinkle, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, and a block for some okay numbers. I look at him more as that 14-team league guy. Capella was all right, 18 and 13, but the field goal percentage, 25% from Clint Capella. That's a little bit weird. The next game was a blowout. What a shocker. The New Orleans Pelicans beat the Cavs 140 to 124. No Rocket Rodney Hood, no Larry Nance, no David Nwaba. So Jordy Clarkson played 30. He had 21 and 4, and he had 3 steals and 3 blocks. That is as fluky as anything for Jordan Clarkson. He is a guy that, while Hood is out though, has 12-team league value. So does Alec Burks, but I would have him fairly further down the list compared to where Clarko is. 17 for Burks. Matty Dellavedova, 17, 4, and 7 for Dally. A strong game there, while Cameron Payne, 16 points and 2 assists. You could make the argument, in fact, I will make the argument, that Colin Sexton is the third best point guard on this team, behind both Cameron Payne and Matty Dellavedova. He is just bad, and I do not write players off in their first season, so I'm not, you know, reducing him to saying he won't become a good player. But he is not a good player, and things don't look great. 13, 3, and 4 on 17% shooting. Look, he got to the line 8 times. That's a positive. Hit all 8 of them. Fantastic. But he is not a 12-team league guy, and I'm not sure he ever becomes a really solid NBA starting caliber point guard. In deeper leagues, you want to look at campaign. 16 points, 3 triples, 2 assists. He's much more comfortable in Cleveland than he was in Chicago, and it's starting to come out in his play. Now, I am the biggest Cameron Payne fan in the world, clearly. But even I've lost a bit of faith in him. But this is a nice thing that's just getting the juices flowing once again for Payne. Shout out to Larry Drew for starting Channing Frye and playing him 10 minutes. What? Why? 29 minutes for Tristan Thompson, 6, 10, and 5. Not his best performance. For the Pelicans, Julius Randle, 17, 8, and 4 with 2 blocks. You've got a little bit of time left. The sell high window is still marginally open. You got to do it now because he just is disinterested defensively. I don't think he's as good as people think that he is. And Nick Mirotic is back, and he looked great. I think we're going to... Randle only played 27 minutes here. There was a bit of an ankle problem early in the game and the blowout, but I think that could be more realistic for him moving forward. As for Mirotic, 22 minutes, 17 and 4 with 4 triples. He's back. If he's on your wire, you clearly grab him, while Lord Alfred Payton added 9 assists, and he is a 12-team league guy. Shout out to Frankie Jackson, who dropped 19 points. A big game from Frank. 4 triples. Where he fits in this rotation, not sure, but he was ahead of Solomon Hill, who was a DMP CD. When Etuan Moore comes back, though, he's probably going to lose a bit of that playing time, but I wouldn't be stunned if Tim Frazier's taken out of the rotation. I know Kenrick Williams will probably be taken out of the rotation as well. So Jackson, an interesting deeper league guy to pay some attention to. Jrue Holiday, 18, 7, and 5 with 3 steals there. The next game that we take a look at is the San Antonio Spurs and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies get the win 96-86. Derek White got into significant foul trouble, 5 fouls in his 16 minutes. He still had 12 points with 2 assists and continues to be one of the best shooters in the NBA, apparently. If anyone drops him after this, go and add him. Go and add him pretty immediately, because this is a foul trouble-induced game. With him limited, Patty Mills played 31 minutes, 13 points, 3 triples, 3 assists, and 2 steals. But Mills is a 20-minute-a-night guy, not a 30-minute-a-night guy. While Bryn Forbesy-Forbes had 14 and 4 with 3 triples, providing jack shit in the other areas, as is his life motto. But those 3-pointers and the points he scores can be useful, but it's still more 14-teamers. LaMarcus Aldridge just 13-7. Pop pulled the pin on this one relatively early, while DeRozan was 9-5-4 on 15 shot attempts. Jakob Poeltl started the game. Davis Bertans started the second half, and then he got ejected. Just a real mess of a game for San Antonio in general. For the Grizz, Marc Gasol was engaged here, really engaged. 26-14, three triples, a steal and a block, and most importantly, his field goal percentage went way back up, and it had been at like 40% for about a month. So that's a good jump back up there. Well, Jaren Jackson Jr., you're going to be stunned. He got into foul trouble. 12 points in 18 minutes. Buy low, send your worst player to whoever has him and try and acquire him. Jermichael Green had an interesting double-double, 12 and 11 in 28 minutes. It's still just streamer, take a flyer, hope it happens in one game type of a scenario for Green. Far from a must-roster guy. Well, Shelvin Mack, as I mentioned, back into the rotation, played 16 minutes, 10-3-7 over Javon Carter. Because according to Bickerstaff, he learned his lesson and he came out more motivated. Cool. Look, with the injury to Dylan Brooks, maybe Mack is a guy that you can look at in deeper formats. Conley was not great, 15-2-6 on 19 shot attempts. Well, Justin Holiday, 6 points in 21 minutes without Dylan Brooks, with Garrett Temple playing only 27 minutes. You can feel pretty good about moving on from Holiday. He will be better than this. I just don't think he's going to be 12-team league better. The next game up, the Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks win 104-94. Let's talk DeAndre Ayton, who played 20 minutes due to foul trouble, had 6 points, 5 rebounds, a steal and a block, and was 1 of 7. He has these really disappointing games at times. We've seen it time and time again. Overall, he's been strong. In fact, he's a top 25 rookie over the last, a top 25 player, the number one rookie over the last 2 weeks. But these sort of performances are what really does limit him, and it's part of the reason why I had him behind Jaren Jackson and Luka Doncic in Dynasty rankings. Rashawn Holmes brought it once again, an unbelievable performance once more with Ayton in foul trouble. 28 minutes, 16-6, 5 assists, 2 steals and a block. Now you could, again, make an argument that Rashawn Holmes at this point in time is a better player than DeAndre Ayton, and you wouldn't get too much pushback from me. It's just never going to happen that he's going to play these minutes. But over the last month, he's a top 80 player in only 19 minutes. He is shooting 72% from the field and 83% from the line and blocking 1.4 shots, which translates to 2.7 per 36, numbers which are so far above anything he's done in his career, it still counts me as skeptical. Now, if you want to go and roster him, by all means, do it. I think he can maybe maintain top 120, top 130 value. But it's going to be a rocky ride. There's going to be ups and downs, no doubt. And it's going to be so dependent on if you can still keep that massive field goal percentage up and the really high block rate, plus stealing some minutes off Ayton. But for now, the numbers are fine. I just don't see that it's going to be at this level consistently. 25 minutes for DeAnthony Melton, only 4 points, but that's not where his numbers come from. 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, continuing to put up great fantasy numbers, and I think he's a 12-team league guy, while only 23 minutes for McCall Bridges. With Booker out, I'd hoped he would be able to solidify at 30-plus. In fact, he was getting 30-plus with Booker in, so the drop in minutes has been confusing. He still had 2 blocks. His value is all in those defensive numbers. I'd have Melton over Bridges, I think, personally. Well, Oubre, 33 minutes for Cali, 14 points, 2 steals and a block, but that is, again, that is fringe 12. That's 14-team league value, and after that big performance last time out, it was unlikely he was going to sustain. TJ Warren had 20 points. It took him 20 shots. Still hit 2 triples, 7 rebounds, and not much else there. While Ali Okobo took all of Jamal Crawford's minutes in this one. It was a back-to-back, so I think we can imagine Crawford will be back in next time. For the Mavericks, Dennis Smith and Dirk were both out, so Maxi Kleber started. And when Maxi Kleber starts, Maxi Kleber pays well. 13 points, 2 triples, 9 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 steals. It's criminal that he goes to be a DNP CD when Dirk and Smith are healthy. If Finney Smith should be out of the rotation, Devin Harris could be, Dwight Powell could be over Kleber. I love what Kleber can do. Could he be the starting power forward on this team if Harrison Barnes opts out and Dirk retires? Yes. Will he? It may be a 20% chance for that next season, but I like what he can do. A 3-point shooting, shot blocking, rebounding, high energy, decent efficiency guy. I think that if I had to make a bet on it, I would say that he has one top 100 NBA fantasy season. I don't know when it will be, but I think he can do it. Doncic was great. 36-5, 3 steals and 4 triples. The free throws were an issue. 63% on 16 attempts is a massive negative, but at least he hit his shots from the field and looked good doing it. 17 for the pencil Harrison Barnes, 3 assists and 2 steals adds a little bit to his profile. The terrible shooting doesn't help. While Wes Matthews had 14 with 5 assists and DeAndre Jordan, he's blocking shots again. Another 2 blocks in this one, 11 and 7. As for Finney Smith, down to 18 minutes, he is the West Coast Scooter Magruder, a guy plucked out of nowhere who coaches love, who's really not as good as what the coaches think that he is. The next game we're going to take a look at was the Utah Jazz beating the Orlando Magic 106-93. DJ Augustin had 23-3-6. He'd been really down the last couple of games. He's going to be flaky. He's going to be up and down. This line, yeah, that's a 12-teamer. The bullshit of 6 points, 2 assists from the other day, that's not. So he is really just a fringe type of a guy. I'd have him say behind a Reggie Jackson in terms of those fringed point guard types. Vooch had 20-8 with 3 triples, while Kem Birch replaced Mo Bamba, who was out dealing with a sore foot. Birch had 7-4 with 2 blocks. Birch is that guy that if he plays 26 a night, he is a must-roster player. Think of a worse Rashawn Holmes. He's that sort of a guy, and he's absolutely a name to watch. Not an every-night part of the rotation, but if Bamba's foot continues to be a problem, Birch is a name to watch. Aaron Gordon, good to see him get a double-double, 18-10, not much else though there. Johnny Isaac continues to struggle, 9-5 with 2 triples. Well, I already talked on Fournier's piss-poor performance. For the Jazz, Joe Ingles had 7 assists with his 16 points. Not a surprise that his assist numbers went up with Ravishing Rick out. Hull Neto got the start, 10-3-3 in 31 minutes. That's okay. There's 14-team league value in Neto. He's going to have this short-term boost, but he's not going to be a guy that's taking all of Rubio's numbers. Jay Crowder had 9 points, not a good night for him, while Gobert had 12-14 with a steal and a block. The next game we look at, the Chicago Bulls lost to the Blazers 124-112. The game was much more of a blowout than it seemed based on that score. The last 5 minutes were garbage time. The Block Panther, Wendell Carter Jr., 22-6 in 29 minutes, out of foul trouble. Good minutes, good production. If he's on your wire, grab him. Chris Dunn looking pretty solid as well, 15-5-7, while Markkanen struggled. He had 3 blocks, so that's a bonus, but only the 10 points on 12 shots. Punch Bob Shiploke, this is the Bobby Porter story. 15-6, no assists, no steals, no blocks. Piss poor effort defensively, doesn't box out. He's just not a good player, but he can fill it up, so that makes his numbers look good. I don't think he's a 12-team league guy. Chandler Hutchison started again, played 30 minutes this time, only 6-8. He is really just a deeper league player, while Wayne Seldon's not getting a look in because we're playing a point guard, Shaq Harrison, at point guard, who had 6 points with 3 assists and a steal.
Big Shaq!
Look, the assist numbers, like, yeah, think bad Marcus Smart for Shaq Harrison, and that's like 16-18 team league valuable. LaVine struggled, 18-2-3 on bad shooting, 32%. He just so struggles in some of these other areas that when the shooting's not there, his values look pretty piss poor. Onto the Blazers, Yusuf Nurkic got into foul trouble. Big men against the Bulls, man, it's great. He played 21 minutes and had 18-8 with a steal and a block. And then Zach Collins came in, played 26 minutes and had 16-9-4 with a steal and a block. You know I love Zach Collins, and he showed it at the start of the season. Don't get overly excited here. This was the Bulls. It was a foul trouble game from Nurkic. I like Collins in the future. I think he's a top 100 player. It's not this season. You should only be looking at him in dynasties and maybe 18-team leagues. CJ McCollum plays well against the Bulls because it's the Bulls. 24-3-4 in 31 minutes, while Lillard had 16-1-10. And Seth Curry, he's getting back to Dallas Seth Curry. Another 3 triples, 23 minutes, 17 points, playing the Shabazz Napier role, sharing the court with Lillard and McCollum. There's some, again, one of those guys that you can add as a 3-point streamer. Why 3-pointers in drafts can be a little bit overvalued. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I don't know what this was. 8 points and 4 rebounds on 33% shooting is shit. 3 blocks is good. I don't know how to classify it. Regardless, I think he is a 12-team league guy. While Jake Layman started for Mo Harkless was bad. Evan Turner, also bad. Neither of those guys is sniffing 12 or probably even 14-team leagues. Maybe that's being harsh to Turner, who can be a 14-team league guy. Let's look at the last game. The Detroit Pistons lost to the Lakers 113-100. Another game whose final score is not as close as it may appear here. A ton of garbage time in this one as well. Reggie Jackson, 32 minutes, 15-2-5. Strong from him. While Langston Galloway, if he was a guy who was a better player, he would definitely be the new sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit player. 15 points in 15 minutes with 5 triples. He is just as likely to have 0 points in 3 minutes next game. There's no rhyme nor reason to how Casey uses him, nor to how Galloway plays. Blake Griffin did not grab a single rebound. 16 points, 6 assists, and 2 triples and a steal. That is really weird for Griffin to do that. Well, Drummond had 6 points. This is Blake Griffin grabs 0 rebounds. Andre Drummond goes 2 of 12 from the field. You could not have said those two things would have happened. I would give you a million guesses, and you would never say that that would both happen in the same game. 3 steals and 2 blocks from Drummond is still nice, but that percentage hit is a disaster. The Duck Luke Kennard played well, 12-5-2. I just want them to give him 30 minutes and see what happens. It's not going to happen because Casey, he's not good of a coach. Reggie Bullock had 13 points in his 33 minutes, while the Shark, Bruce Brown, baby shark, only 24 minutes for Brownie, 8 points with 2 assists there. I do like him long term. I think he can be a top 150 guy at some point in the next 4 to 5 years. It's not happening here, but the fact that he's starting already does bode well for his future. On to the Lakers, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma. He decided that he was going to be Bobby Portis and score 41 points and do nothing else. 2 rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks. Shot the same from the field and from the line, 67% there. Just a huge performance from Kuzma and empty in many areas. I said on the sell high, buy low podcast the other day that his numbers were way off, so you buy low. After this, you sell high. And that's all it's about. And someone called me out for it. Oh man, you had Kuzma on the sell high list the other day. Now you've got him on the buy low list. Like, no shit. Because players' values vary. And while Kuzma was struggling, you bought him low and then you try and sell him high. And after this, scoring 41 points for the Lakers, people will get erect. And you can go and try and turn that into some decent value. Mick Beasley. If you're in deeper leagues, you got to look at Beasley. 19 points in 19 minutes, 4 assists, 2 blocks. Look at his recent games. When LeBron comes back, the party's likely over. Beasley is playing well. Lonzo, just the 5 points, but 11 assists, 2 steals, and a block is where his value's at. Another sell-high candidate, I think. While Caldwell Pope had 15, 6, and 4, and Josh the Hitman Hart struggled. He did rebound well, which he does do well. 7 boards there, but he is not a 12-team league must-roster guy by any stretch. Tyson Chandler had a rest day, so Ivica Zubac moved in. Would have been nice to know that beforehand. 11-9 for Zubac there, while Lance Stevenson got back to 22 minutes, 0 points. Yeah. He is not really helping all that many people. All right, let's move on now to talk some DFS for Thursday's games. We will start, of course, though, by looking at the perfect lineups on DraftKings. Matty Dellavedova, Jimmy Harden, Jaylen Brown, Tony Davis, Zach Collins, Jordy Clarkson, Rashawn Holmes, and Marc Gasol, totaling $393 for a cost of the full $50,000. On FanDuel, it's the all-Aussie backcourt of Patty Mills and Matty Dellavedova, Luka Doncic, Jordy Clarkson, Yanni Antetokounmpo, Mick Beasley, Tone Davis, Rishon Holmes, and Marc Gasol, a very internationally flavored perfect lineup there. Out of the 9 guys, I think we have 5 international players, Gasol, Antetokounmpo, Doncic, Dally, and Millsy. That totaled $416.1, and that total cost there was $59,900. All right, let's look at these games for Thursday now. 4 games on across the NBA. We're going to be focusing on FanDuel pricing mainly today. The first game we look at is the Boston Celtics taking on the Miami Heat. The Celtics on a back-to-back after comfortably accounting for the Indiana Pacers on Wednesday. They are favored by 1 point here on the road. The total is 210. So, yeah, everything's looking like it could be an even matchup. The Heat are a little bit unpredictable, but the Celtics on a back-to-back on the road. He pushes this one pretty close. It's a low total, by far the lowest total of all the 4 games on. So that's something to pay attention to for GPPs. But in terms of competitiveness, it's close to the most competitive game on the slate. At point guard, Kyrie Irving's at 8,400. He averages 43 against the Miami Heat. No reason to think outside of a blowout that he can't get close to that number again, and this isn't a game that I imagine is going to be a blowout. So I think Kyrie is very firmly in play here in this one on Miami. No point guards to really pay attention to unless you're big on Tyler Johnson, which I'm not. At shooting guard, Jaylen Brown dropped 41 against the Pacers. He got really red hot. He's very, very hard to rely upon, but that 4,200 price tag is very cheap. And there is some GPP upside in Jaylen Brown. That's really about it. Marcus Smart at 51. I'd rather take Brown, the cheaper price, as a GPP guy. And then for the Heat, you got Deion Waiters, who exploded for 25 points last game. I'm not really relying upon that again. While Dwayne Wade at 5,400. Wade's giving you 25 a night comfortably at the moment. So there is something there for Wade. I just think you're probably better off in a lot of cases. Going in another direction, should have finished that sentence. At small forward, Joshy Richardson's at 6,500 has really been underperforming. That means I think his roster percentage will be low, making him an interesting tournament guy, averaging just 26 over the last three. If the shots go in with a $700 price drop, I think this does work out pretty nicely for Richardson, while Gordie Hayward's at 5,500. Dropped 25 in 22 minutes against the Pacers today. That's obviously a great return. Hopefully he's needed to play a little bit more against Miami and should be able to get high 20s. I'm not looking at him as a must roster guy, but an interesting tournament guy. Well, Justice Winslow at 66 hasn't really been at that level. I'm not massively into him against the Celtics team, who defends quite well. Love Marcus Morris here, 4,700, cheap price, big game against Indiana, super matchup as well here. While Jayce Tatum at 61, with the limited options available on this slate, I think both Tatum and Morris are in play for the Heat. Jim Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Bam Adebayo, I don't know how we can trust any of those guys who are power forward eligible. Hassan Whiteside's at 7,500. I think that's probably a little bit too high for Hassan, whose minutes are quite fluctuating. Also, not a good matchup necessarily against Al Horford, so I'd probably end up leaving him alone. While Horford on a back-to-back, who's playing under 25 minutes nearly every game at the moment as he tries to deal with that tendonitis, I think that would be a bad play at 6,500. On DraftKings, I like Richardson. Winslow comes in a lot more palatable over there. And Olynyk at 39, it's got that GPP upside against his former team, where he has averaged 34 against them in the past contests last season. Let us go now on to the next game on this slate. We're looking at the LA Clippers and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are 5-point favorites. The total is 226. Gaz Harris, probably should have plugged that in. Let's try that again.
Nice, Gary!
Much better for Gary Harris. He's questionable with a hamstring injury. If he is out, I'd imagine Malik Beasley and Torrey Craig get that bump. More usage going through Jokic, Millsap, and Jamal Murray as well. At point guard, the Blue Arrow's at 7,200. I think that's too high to rely upon him in cash, but he's clearly got 55-point upside, and that's why I'd look at him in tournaments. Pat Beverley, the only reason I consider him is at 39, and I don't think it's a super strong option. While Shai Gilgeous-Alexander dropped 34 points last game on the back of a lot of defensive numbers, the minutes were still low, and I don't think that's a reliable thing for us there. Monty Morris at 4,000. If Gary Harris is out, Morris gets a bit of a boost, as does Malik Beasley at 39. I'll take Beasley over Morris, especially if Harris is out. Otherwise, I'd fade both of those guys. Torrey Craig also had a monster last game, 35 points, which included 16 rebounds. That's an unrealistic number to expect for Craig to continue to have, but he would be a tournament guy if Harris happens to miss. If Harris plays, of course, we've got to talk about that significance. For some reason, he's listed as a small forward on FanDuel. He's at $5,000. It's a low price because he's coming back from the injury, so I would only consider him for tournaments despite how appealing that might look. Lou Williams is at 7,000 as a shooting guard. He's putting up some pretty strong numbers at the moment. The Nuggets are quite good defensively, so that could limit Lou, but I don't hate using him there. While at small forward, you've got the Rooster Danilo Gallinari against his former team, 7,400. I'm not sure that there's a lot of value in that. Same with Wancho. In fact, with Wancho, there's zero value. At power forward, love Paul Millsap here, 6,800 for Millsap. He is he's a guy that's putting up some pretty strong numbers of late, and it's a perfect matchup for him against the Clippers. 6,800, he should be looking for 35-plus here, I would imagine, while Toby Harris at 76. I think a points output from Harris and Millsap could be similar, while Millsap is $800 cheaper. The table, Montrezl Harrell at 7,600. He dropped 49 last game against the Hornets. I'm not sure he's going to be able to do that here. Probably one I'd stay away from at that sort of a price tag. At center, Jokic is at $11,000.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Look, it's just really hard to go past him. A perfect matchup again, much like the front court for the Clippers allows a shit ton of points, and Jokic is one of the best players in the NBA. Mason Plumlee probably not looking there, nor with Marcin Gortat. Over on DraftKings, a lot of value here. Millsap, Jokic, the Blue Arrow, the Rooster, the Table, Toby Harris. I think all of these guys have cash appeal and some tournament value as well. Harris may be more tournaments than cash. And then, of course, you've got Malik Beasley at 3,800, who is super appealing if Harris is going to miss, which I think is probably likely at this point. The next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs on a back-to-back after losing to the Grizzlies. The Thunder are favored by 1 point here. The total is 224.5, so a combination of a very close spread and a pretty decently high total. Nerlens Noel is out with a concussion issue. That's going to give more minutes to guys like Abdul Nadir. Alex Abrines is also out, so more minutes to Dennis Schroeder, Patrick Patterson, Jeremy Grant. Steven Adams gets a little bit of a boost there as well with Noel out. At point guard, Bryn Forbes at 4,600. Quick note, Rudy Gay is also out for the San Antonio Spurs. Forbes is at 4,600. He is okay at that price. I just don't see much in terms of upside. Well, Derek White at 55. I think a lot of people will be off White after Wednesday's performance, but remember, he accumulated 5,000 in about 15 minutes, so that's what limited his playing time. This could be a nice bounce back for Derek here. While Pat Mills had a strong game on Wednesday at 38, I don't really see the massive upside there. I love DeMar DeRozan at 9,000, massively strong play. And I think Schroeder, who's been terrible of late at 5,200, could be that low percentage GPP guy that you have a look at here. Bellinelli, Terry Ferguson, they're not doing it for me. Paul George at 9,700, the Beatle, is at a really strong price. The numbers haven't quite been there for him recently, but I do think this is a spot where he can go for 50. So a solid floor, worth a look. While Davis Bertans was ejected on Wednesday, I don't think that'll influence his status here. He's an option to start with Rudy Gay out. Probably won't do that, but always interesting for GPPs at least. At power forward, I like LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,100 quite a bit. I think that's a pretty strong cash option. While Jeremy Grant, who's been a little bit disappointing, I think he comes into tournament consideration. At center, Pirtle's at 47. That's too expensive. Steve Adams at 7,200. I'm in on Steve Adams at 72 with Noel out. And then you got Pau Gasol at 3,900, who I don't think is really going to have any sort of large impact. On DraftKings, Aldridge, DeRozan, White, Westbrook. I don't like Westbrook that much on FanDuel. He is an option, of course. I like him on DraftKings quite a bit. Paul George over there looks good too, while Schroeder at 48 and Poeltl at 3,600, especially that Poeltl at 36. They have some pretty decent appeal over there. Next up, the last game of the night, the Detroit Pistons and the Sacramento Kings. The Pistons on a back-to-back here, taking on the Kings, who last game lost to the Suns in a pretty disappointing fashion. The Kings are favored by 5. The total is 224.5 points. Iman Shumpert is questionable for the old Kings, while we need to check on Ish Smith, who missed Wednesday's game against the Lakers. He's going to return some point on this road trip. We just don't know when. Same with Zaza Pachulia. If Zaza's out, it becomes the tackle box John Lua. Reggie Jackson at 52. I quite like Reggie at that salary. Really positive matchup, high-tempo game. He should be able to exceed 25, 26 points decently comfortably. While De'Aaron Fox at 8,600. Like the matchup, and I like him as a player pretty clearly. At shooting guard, you've got the Shark, Bruce Brown. Baby Shark, he's probably going to start, but is he going to do enough? Most likely not. Him and Reggie Bullock not really doing it for me, but I do like Bogdan Bogdanovic at 63. Much prefer him to, say, Buddy Hield at 7,200, who's more of a tournament player. The Duck, Luke Kennard, is your real weird GPP long shot guy. At small forward, Bielitsa's at 5,400. With Bagley back, I don't see that as being an option really at all. Justin Jackson at 3,900 is only in play if Shumpert is out. And if Shumpert is out, he actually fits a cash bill pretty nicely to get some other high price guys in. The big man, Harry Giles at 35, I don't really think so. Blake Griffin at 10,000, I love what Griffin's doing. Averaging 51 over the last three, a positive matchup. He is a strong play here. Bagley, a little bit limited, I think, in minutes. While at center, you got Cauley Stein at 7,500, who's putting up some strong numbers without getting any blocks. He's okay. I like Drummond at 98, although that's probably just a little bit too high. And out of that Cauley Stein, Drummond, Griffin trio, I would take Blake out of that three. Then Cauley Stein and then Drummond would be my order of selecting those players depending on how they fit in. On DraftKings, Jackson, Fox, Cauley Stein, Griffin, and Bogdanovic all look good there. While the 3,700 for the Shark, Bruce Brown, I think that's a pretty decent GPP upside sort of a situation. Let's look now at some stud and value plays. On DraftKings, I like Jokic as a stud, and my value play is Joshy Richardson. My stud on FanDuel is LaMarcus Aldridge, and my value is Paul Millsap. On Yahoo, my stud is Jokic, and my value play is Reggie Bullock at 11. And my stud on DraftStars is Blake Griffin, and my value play is Paul Millsap. That will do it for today's podcast. Make sure after you listen to this, you go check out your favorite local team by telling your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On. Insert team name here. Locked On Nets, Locked On Knicks, Locked On Sixers. Do that and it will play your podcast for you immediately. And if you like this show, go and leave a review. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, hit subscribe, and hit that little bell so you never miss an episode. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jason Tatum.